welcome to The Inner Game. I'm Gwen Garcelon, your host. Thanks for listening. Oh, The Inner Game is about how we nurture and attend to our mind, body, spirit, and how that allows us to make a bigger difference and make a bigger contribution in the area of purpose that calls to us. And these are conversations with people who are committed to making an evolutionary difference with their lives from a place of balance and love and service. Now in my 9th year of the show, can't believe that, this has become a tradition in January to listen back to the shows from the previous year and look for the themes and messages that stand out and just moments that I loved. So welcome to the Best of 2025 show. This year I noticed that I was really dragging my heels around going back and listening to the 2025 episodes. And this has happened, you know, before. And I just had an awareness that I wanted to share because it's also a theme that came up this year. So self-appreciation, self-honoring, self-trust. I realize that this is one of the shadows that I have danced with throughout life, lack of those things. And, you know, self-doubt, wanting to stay under the radar, behind the scenes. You know, people that know me might not even see this, but it's there. And maybe it's something you struggle with as well. And I hope this recap of conversations will be of service to you and maybe inspire you to go a little or a lot bigger in 2026. I also notice that when I listen back to these conversations, I hear things at a deeper level. And sometimes I'm ready for a message that didn't land for me in the initial conversation. So I invite you to revisit some of these episodes or listen for the first time if you missed them last year. They're on Apple Podcasts or on the kdnk.org website. Just search for The Inner Game and you'll find the whole archive. A theme that was central in 2024 was right relationship to the land, rebuilding our innate and sacred connection to the natural world. This often came up, in 2025, and I notice it as an overarching evolutionary mandate. If you're looking for a place, you know, a starting place in any healing journey, I highly recommend getting outside on the land, making that a priority for 2026. Another theme I noticed was becoming more comfortable with uncertainty and exploring a relationship to faith. You know, I think as everything becomes more and more uncertain in our world, it's having an orientation to life that everything is showing up for you, that even challenges are our gifts for our growth and hold all of the things that we need to self-actualize on our path. So that's another thing to really dance with in this coming year is looking at your relationship to uncertainty and what is it that gives you confidence and peace that you're showing up with your best, that life is showing up with everything that you need, no matter what it looks like on the outside. So in April, I got to speak with Robert Egger. He was one of my first guests on the show way back. He's a dear friend of mine, and he is an award-winning social entrepreneur and food system thought leader. He wrote a book for that was called Begging for Change. And he's just an amazing person. And it was really a delight to get to check back in with him and see what was new in his journey of service and inner growth. And on the show, he he mentioned, I always ask my guests, well, almost always, about their kind of spiritual origin story, like what it was like for them growing up. And Robert was raised Catholic and remembered, you know, enjoying some interpretations of stories that he heard in sermons. But he shared that his spirituality really blossomed through the music of the 60s. You know, that was when he was coming of age. And, you know, it was just amazing to me, especially, you know, that era. So much about, you know, deep feelings and the whole awakening of, you know, the social justice movement. And Robert talked about how so much of that music was about taking those deep feelings of love and equality and social justice and putting it into action. And I heard someone say recently that action is the antidote to despair. And that really hit me because it's something I've been working with in my whole adult life and my career. I had the opportunity to work for 10 years in the movement to end hunger and poverty and supporting citizen action groups to become, you know, advocates for specific pieces of legislation. And I noticed that, you know, you would think that being up close to that kind of heaviness of hunger in our world and poverty in our world, and especially kind of the grinding work of legislative action, which can take so long sometimes to get to a point where there's really a shift. But I found that the people who were volunteers and people who are on staff, that organization called Results, had a real access to joy. And I really got to feel viscerally how action is the antidote to despair. So I just offer that as kind of a koan, you know, for this year, to look for places where you can be more in action, where you can be more in service, and know that rather than burning you out, that will be a real catalyst for some spiritual support and joy. Robert also reminded me of the model that he started, the DC Central Kitchen, which was really an evolution of the soup kitchen model in really innovative ways. And it was one of the ways that you know, he's been able to serve in such a big way in his life. It was a beautiful model and still is active today in D.C., but allowing for job training to the homeless and to felons who had, you know, been released from prison. It's really hard for folks like that to get into a job. And his program trained them in culinary services. And he would also invite civic leaders, including President Obama, to come and serve at the kitchen alongside these job trainees. So, such a beautiful model of equity and inclusion. And they would serve together, providing meals to the homeless and anyone who needed a meal, and do the job training at the same time. And they would source food from all of the conferences in D.C. that, you know, were getting rid of, you know, had so much excess. And they would repurpose that food in their kitchen and serve meals. They would also source produce from local farms. So there's so many interlocking, beautiful things about this model. And I think just something for us to continue to think about as we, you know, look at things that are becoming more important, like mutual aid and meeting needs in our communities, and realizing that they're, you know, to be creative with our models and look at how many different things we might be able to address in one organization. You know, Robert also said, you know, as he was getting older, that he was not able to run and hike as much as he had in the past. And it was always really important for him to get out in nature as part of his own practice. And he shared that now he's got an e-bike that, you know, he can get into the Ortiz Mountains in New Mexico where he lives. And that's been a wonderful support for him. So, that theme of sourcing our creativity from time in nature and the wholeness that it and the awe that it provides for us. In a couple of times a year, I speak at a non-denominational spiritual community called a spiritual center here in Carbondale. And in June, I gave a talk building on Joanna Macy's work, The Work That Reconnects, and specifically something she called the holding practices. And I didn't know it at the time, but she would pass on July 19th. So it's really special to kind of look back at this talk and, you know, sort of feel her energy weaving through it at the end of her life. And, you know, how we take on our inner coherence amidst the collapse of so much in our lives and in the world is such a big deal, and was so central to her work, again, called The Work That Reconnects. So much of it was about taking on our shadows and how to love each other, you know, expanding our emotional feeling capacity to evolve toward a more felt unity consciousness. And, you know, how we act with compassion, being an activist of the heart, you know, holding back the destruction of our planet and the destruction of society. These were all things that were part of holding practices. And I shared a story in the talk about seeing three bald eagles on the first day of a river trip last spring, and how eagle medicine is a big part of our growth as a human species right now. And I wanted to just read to you a little bit about eagle medicine. It's the ability to live in the realm of spirit and yet remain connected and balanced within the realm of earth. Eagle reminds us to take heart and gather our courage, for the universe is presenting us with an opportunity to soar above the mundane levels of everyday life. Eagle teaches you to broaden your sense of self beyond the horizon of what is presently visible, and fiercely attack your personal fear of the unknown. The wings of your soul will be supported by the ever-present breezes, which are the breath of the Great Spirit. And it just really hits me, you know, how the universe is talking to us all the time, how Earth and Earth spirits are constantly supporting us. And that was a particularly special message about finding our courage and knowing that that support will exist even when we are in a place of fear or in a place of fear about the future. I think it's so important to again start to reorient ourselves toward a place of faith that no matter what things look like, they're working out for the highest and best. You know, as we approach Martin Luther King Day, I always think of his moral arc of the universe that heads toward more joy, more inclusivity, more healing, more freedom. That's where we're headed. And to really, you know, hold that as to hold the faith of that. And then in the end of my talk in June, I mentioned that, you know, something that Jung said, Carl Jung said, that there's no birth of consciousness without pain. And our pain for the world is a way that we really join with the collective. It's something that knits us together and, again, helps us access our emotional state, our emotional feelings that help us to access unity consciousness. You know, and something that that one of my teachers always reminded me, you know, back in my work in the hunger and poverty movement, was not being afraid to allow my heart to break, because it makes us more porous and, again, more connected. It's that way that we feel each other. And this is so important, you know, as we do the work of community building, that will be more and more important as time goes on, because we're only as strong as the social fabric that holds us. That's perhaps one of the most important holding practices, is community building in any way or shape or form that shows up for you. Don't be afraid of the heartbreak that you might get up close to, and continue to build that social fabric that holds us all. So just to take a quick break here, this is Gwen Garcelon, and you're listening to The Inner Game on KDNK. Today's show is the best of 2025, my recap of insights and favorite moments from the episodes of last year. In August, I had the real pleasure of talking with an novelist and writer called Tim Weed. I'd met him at a book signing for his award-winning book now, The Afterlife Project, and it was a finalist for the PRISM Prize in Climate Fiction. And, you know, I haven't been necessarily a science fiction, fan in the past, but I'm realizing that what I'm seeing in the science fiction and climate fiction genre are some really beautiful visions of the future. And I think that's something we very much need to spark our imagination for what's possible and to get real about what we're facing and how to move through that. So I highly recommend his book, The Afterlife Project. And again, his name is Tim Weed. We talked a lot about reclaiming a sacred relationship to nature and our earth. And his book is so much about that. You know, how to connect to the non-human world of spirit and how nature is really a portal that takes us there. And he recommended another book called Sacred Nature by Karen Armstrong that I'm reading right now, which I also recommend. He talked about his spiritual practice of daily nature immersion. And I so resonated with that, because sometimes I feel guilty about taking the time that I do to immerse myself in nature on a daily basis. But, you know, I realize that it's what keeps me clear. It's what keeps me generative. It's what allows me to access my creativity. And those are all things we really need to be about the work of solving problems and being in service to these times. In October, I spoke with a gal named Lauren Galanis, and she's the regenerative landscape manager at Gacina Landscape Management in San Francisco. I met her when she attended my nature immersion retreat in September of this year. And she is just an amazing person who's had training in Chinese medicine and permaculture and shamanism. And she's really bringing this, you know, really taking a stand for the earth in her work. And I, when I asked her about how she's using that training, you know, sort of as a healer to bring healing to the land, and she immediately said, well, it's all through the soil. The soil heals us. It's what creates a healthy gut biome, especially when we can get our hands in the dirt and, you know, get some contact with the natural world. It's such a, it's the building block, the foundational piece of how we access health. And, you know, I often ask people if what their spiritual practices look like. And she said she had a practice of gratitude, which has been really foundational for me and really changed my orientation to when challenging things happen. If I look through the lens of gratitude, then I can see the gifts. And it's I just recommend doing this because I know how much we need to reorient ourselves so much every day, many times a day. And this is something that really works. She also mentioned really watching her inner dialogue, you know, her self-talk. Was it based in self-love or self-doubt or self-loathing? And that's a really important piece too, because when we have self-talk that knocks us down, it's very hard to access courage or creativity. So looking at the orientation of our self-talk and making sure that we're really lifting ourselves up, that we're really looking at our talents and the ways that we contribute and how to do that better, that's a big deal. You know, I talked with Kyle Jason Lightsky, who's a who lives in Carbondale, and talked about his men's work. He's a men's work facilitator and a coach. And he shared about, you know, we really talked about having loss in our early lives. He lost his brother when he was just 6 years old. And I lost my dad when I was 16. And I noticed that we had a lot of similarities in kind of the gifts of that, which were not taking our lives for granted, really having a deepening of our awareness of the preciousness of life, and also both having that experience have us has us step into positions of leadership and service as part of, you know, wanting to make our lives make a difference. And also really looking at the trauma and the shadows that can occur when there's loss, and really taking those on, you know, allowing ourselves to be vulnerable with ourselves is a huge way that we connect with ourselves and others. And we also, again, talked about connection to nature, the importance of being in right relationship, whatever that is for you. He works with an Ayurvedic framework of the elements, so staying in balance with how air, water, earth, and fire are showing up, you know, bodily. And that felt like a beautiful way to, you know, to keep that feeling of connection to the natural world. And I closed out the year with the second of my talks at a spiritual center. And I gave a talk called Natural Democracy, where I really looked at democracy as a sacred practice and the divine nature of its origins and practices that can catalyze more sacred expressions of democracy in our country. So it was, and natural democracy is really based on the wisdom of the natural world and something called natural law. Cicero's work in natural law heavily influenced the foundation of our American democracy. Things like checks and balances, separation of powers, mixed government models to avoid tyranny, the rule of law. These were all sourced from Cicero's work. And natural law is really the divine law that governs the human condition, based in unity consciousness, no separation between nature and humans. So there's two kind of frameworks that that are part of natural democracy. One is an ecological framework, that all of life is afforded the same rights as humans. And we see this in the emergence of things like rights of nature. So giving rivers and forests the same rights as human beings. And why shouldn't that be so? Because we only exist when they're healthy. And then there's a philosophical framework that includes things like equality, dignity, freedom, really a world that works for everyone, that's based in inclusivity. And I just love, so if you want to go back and listen to that talk, there's some great practices that help in giving us ideas for how to express this more in our daily lives, and you know what we can do on different levels to support the hopeful emergence of natural democracy as a way that we operate in the world and in our country. Oh, it was just, it's just been a big year, and it looks like we're headed that way again. And I just thank you for listening. You can find past shows on the kdnk.org website. Just search The Inner Game or on Apple Podcasts. Or also on my website, gwengarcelon.com, where you can find info about my coaching, retreats, and consulting work. This theme music rocks are ancient, is Peter Mayer. Mountains are high. Until next time, much love. Gray. Winds are restless. Trees are patient. You, my child, are away. Waves are crashing, rivers churning, planets twirling.